Thank you so much, Dominic, for introduction. Thank you for inviting me to give this talk. Yeah, I apologize. I can't be there in person, but still very excited to give you this talk and talk to some of you later on. So today I'm going to be talking about our recent work with my advisor, Sabir, and Ryan Samajdar, who is a postdoc at Princeton, about infrared quantum spin glasses in the field. But before I get into details, let me just first introduce myself, since most of you probably don't know me. So I'm originally from Russia and I studied high energy theory for quite a few years. And then once I joined Harvard, I decided to switch and join Sabir's group. And I did quite a lot of work on Sajid-Fia model, Sajid-Fia-Kitaev model, random TJ models. So it's all models with disorder, and I was trying to study some equilibrium properties of them and time dynamics as well. And then I went to KETP for graduate fellowships, a fellowship, and I studied random quantum circuits for half a year. That was really fun. And then I came back to Harvard, and I returned to condensed matter research, and I studied quantum spin glasses, which I'm going to be talking about today. So here's the outline of my talk. I will first introduce the spin glasses, the way I understand them, and motivate why we should study them. And then I will focus on overview of methods, how we obtain a solution, equilibrium solution specifically of spin glasses. And then I will share results on two models that outlined in the paper. So it's a quantum Ising model and P equals 3 rotor model or P spin model. And then I will conclude and give you the outlook of what I want to do for the foreseeable future. So yeah, let me start with the introduction and motivation. So the definition of spin glasses, condensed matter community, like different people define it differently, but condensed matter community usually defines it as it's a magnetic state with randomness and frustration. As it is, it's a mixture of non-magnetic host metal and small fraction of magnetic atoms that are introduced in that host metal. So on the figure on the left, you can see that there can be like a non-frustrated configuration, frustrated configuration is where spins can decide which way to turn. So that's the frustration. And the spin glass is essentially it's a state that you quench. So you start with some, like randomized configuration, and you quench and then you cool it down. And then what you see at very low temperatures, what happens is the spins, they completely disordered in orientation, and that sort of instance is stays like that for a long time, and that's how we characterize spin glasses. So that's an example of that configuration of spins. So what happens at low temperature is that, as I just said, spins freeze, and this freeze in a complicated and random configuration. And if you want to look at the energy or the free energy, you will see this landscape. That's what we usually say that spin glass characterized by weird and complicated energy landscape, and that's what happens here. So as you can see, there are many, many local minima here, and there are many valleys, and global minimum is really hard to find because system usually gets stuck in some local minimum. And there are energy barriers, depending on which model you're considering of spin glass. Sometimes in infinite range model, there are infinite barriers, so you can actually find these valleys pretty precisely. But in finite range spin glasses, these barriers are not that high, so the system like is kind of can fluctuate from value to value sometimes, but it can do it. It can still get stuck on for a long time in one of them. It's also characterized by slow dynamics. Again, as just mentioned. And what does it mean by slow dynamics is when we measure autocorrelation function of spins, autocorrelation function that has two time variables, it saturates to a constant value at sufficiently long time scales. And that happens due to these barriers and local minima structure.
A
So what I
question.
mean by that is, yeah.
Suppose t minus t prime is infinite. I mean, is this time scale just some intermediate time scale, or does it persist to the infinite time scale.
So you mean if you have t minus t prime or?
Yeah, if this is infinite.
Yeah. So essentially, yeah. So you would expect equilibrium, right? At equilibrium? Is that what you're talking about?
Meaning in the absolute minimum, not the local minimum. Is it
So if you
correct?
find absolute minimum.
Yeah, if I find the local minimum, then if I wait for long enough, I will get to the absolute minimum, will I?
Well, yeah. Probably. Technically, yes, but it may take just very, very long time.
Okay.
And how long, it just depends on the barrier and yeah, the structure of the neutrons.
By very long time, can it be growing with the system size? Like in a thermodynamic limit, the time scale could be infinite or not.
Yeah, that's well, I don't think we know, honestly. Because the only analytical studies we have is like on thin trench spin glasses. For actual spin glasses, we don't really know.
I see.
And numerical, I just wanted to mention as well that numerical studies, for example, on the first plot here, you see that so this TW is so-called waiting time. So it's the time you wait until you start measuring countercorrelation function. The longer you wait, the more you saturate to some value. So like on the landscape, it just means that like the more it gets stuck to some value, but it still does not like it's not plateau, right? It still like sort of goes down a little bit. Yeah, so this is actual from a paper, from experimental paper that I found, where they did like similar numerical sort of modeling here. And they also like waited for a long enough time, but then and then you see that system like slowly equilibrates, but we just it's hard to find this like time scale whether you can actually see, you know, plateau. That's kind of a big question. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so that's what I was saying, that the system gets stuck in a local minimum, and that's why you see this like saturation of the correlation function. Yeah. Then why, let me just say a couple of things why are they interesting. So first of all, from the community who's interested in cuprates, they sort of recently in 2020 there was experimental observation of a spin glass ordering, also of spin glass phase, like regime, probably better say, where you suppress superconductivity. This is the cuprate high temperature superconducting phase diagram. So it's called up material, where they suppress superconducting dome, and what they see is that at low enough doping, they see some like glassiness, glassy regime. So it's not really clear where it's coming from and why it's in there. So that's the question. It's interesting also because there's this interesting features that along polarization time, rough energy landscape, that we still have very little understanding of, even though this field was around for many years. And they are happening due to disordered frustration. So it's not super clear. There are many arguments whether it's a phase, whether it's not a phase. So there's just a lot of arguments going on. It's just interesting to kind of study and, you know, come to some conclusion regarding this. It's not super clear what is the mechanism for spin glass ordering or for spin glassiness in finite dimensions. So it's very poorly understood. And from the modern perspective, I'd say, people from computer science got very interested in spin glasses because it's in the class of the combinatorial optimization problems. So in other words, it's an NP-hard problem that is like precisely physical. But if it's precisely physical, then you can potentially find a way to solve it using some, you know, like physical quantum simulator, for example. Yeah, so that's kind of a natural problem to study in physics, but it can also benefit to computer science community.
Question.
Yeah.
As for the experiments, Do people find spin glass signature only in one qubit or universally in all the qubits?
I couldn't, I honestly didn't look very closely, but it seems like there it's not in all of them. I don't think it's like everybody agrees that there is less ordering.
I see. What about other materials?
Yeah, I'm not, I need to look into that. I'm not aware of that. And I'm not aware of that because I'm going to be considering it from the perspective of quantum simulators rather than actual materials.
Thanks.
The thing about actual materials is that some people say that it doesn't really naturally exist. Spin glass doesn't naturally exist in materials, although I just presented to you, you know, the glassiness and cuprates, but we don't really know what kind of glassiness it is. Is it actual spin glass or it's just somehow slow dynamics appears from somewhere? I don't think we know that. Yeah, so from material science perspective, it's kind of, people usually say it's useless because it doesn't appear in natural materials, and also it's hard to like find the use for it. So yeah, that's why, you know, in terms of quantum combinatorial optimization problem, it sounds a little more interesting. Yeah, so it's tightly connected to this class of problems, and the reason is because the interaction between the two spins, it's random, the models will be considering they are also, this JAJ is going to be all-to-all interaction. So the question is how to find the ground state of this kind of Hamiltonian. As you can see, there are two to the n configurations of n spins, and therefore it's like exponentially hard to find the ground state. This problem therefore is called NP-hard problem, and there's a whole class of these problems, and the idea is that if you can solve one NP-hard problem, you can solve all of them because there is a mapping between all of them. The mapping though is not very easy to find, but it's not impossible, so one can claim that, you know, it's still very useful. So classically it's really, really hard to solve, as I already said there, but although maybe there are some quantum algorithms that can solve it better. Can we find anything like that? Maybe some of you are aware that at Harvard recently, Michel Lukin's group realized so-called MIS problem, maximally dependent set problem. And it's also an optimization problem. And they show the quantum speed up compared to average classical algorithm. So that said, maybe spin glass is not that different from an optimization problem. Maybe we can like find a way to using this analog quantum simulator and, you know, realize that and actually say something about it. So let me just go into a little bit more technical details about spin glasses. So what are the approaches to study them? There are a few numerical approaches. Recently, people were interested in deep learning algorithms, large language models. This is the recent paper that I found. And that seems to be very interesting and, you know, very fruitful to do this kind of algorithms on spin glasses. There are also, you know, Monte Carlo method, that is the most used one because there's intrinsic randomness in Monte Carlo, so, you know, people kind of use it as the first go. But it's pretty inefficient since you need to generate many states to achieve equilibrium. Theoretical approaches, though, include large N expansion, Schwinger-Keldysh formalism for out-of-equilibrium dynamics, and replica symmetry breaking for equilibrium. There is also a droplet model. So there are quite a few models and approaches to study them. I'm going to be focusing on large N expansion today. So the idea of equilibrium approach is replica trick. So pretty much everything that is studying equilibrium dynamics or just model in equilibrium, they all use replica trick. So what is a replica trick? Replica trick is a method that is used to evaluate free energy of a system with quenched and annealed disorder. So this z, the partition function, it's, you know, in this spin glasses, it's very complicated to evaluate because there is randomness, there is disorder, frustration, and you know, just evaluation of z is not possible. Moreover, we need to average over disorder. So we need to compute this kind of partition function, right? Oh, this kind of free energy. So the way to do that is use the replica trick, which is used in many directions as well these days, also in random quantum circuits, for example, where what you do is you take your system and you replicate it 10 times. And then instead of computing this kind of function, you compute just z to the n averaged. This we can't do for many systems. And then after you do that, you just take this limit of n goes to zero. Before you do that, though, you need to promote n to an integer number. And once that happens, you just need to compute this partition function. So you have n integrals, and yeah, you just average over disorder this the exponent. Yeah, so that's what you said. Then once when you do that, how do you characterize spin glass specifically? You need to use an order parameter, and in this case, it's going to be Edwards Hutchinson order parameter. So this parameter is just this. It's very similar to magnetization, except it's squared and then averaged. And that proves to be very useful for spin glasses. Let me just show you a very quick example for those of you who are not aware how to do this kind of calculations. So we have, for example, pure order model. So it's a very pretty simple to explain how to work with this. Now with this replica trick. So the Hamiltonian for p-rotor model is as follows. So you have p spins, and they all interact with each other with this coupling, JJ. So this coupling is random, and it's all tall, and it's Gaussian distributed. Usually we take p greater than 3, because p equals 2 is the Ising model. And here we'll study p equals 3 specifically. In addition, you also need to introduce some constraint. So you have this spins squared, and you take sum of all of them, and you get n. So it's called the spherical constraint for this model. Now, what you want to do, you want to average over disorder. So first, let's not replicate the system. Let's just take an average of the partition function. So we do this very simply by just, you know, as I said, this JJ is Gaussian distributed. So this is the distribution.
Sorry, can I ask a question? So I got confused a little bit. So if P is odd, if P is odd, what is the symmetry of this model?
Oh, yeah, there is no symmetry here.
There's no symmetry. Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know, to average over disorder, what you do is you multiply this by this distribution function, and you just integrate over all GAJ. And this is just simple Gaussian integral, so you can integrate it very quickly, and you obtain this kind of partition function. So it's a very simple result. However, it turns out not to be correct. And what you do instead, you need to do quenched average. What quenched average means is that you replicate your system first n times, and then you average over this order. So that's what we do. We again, you know, just replicate the system n times. This is the sum over all n. And then this integration over Gaussian variable gives us this kind of, you know, term, which has like six sigmas here. But if you have like p equals 4, then it's going to be 8 sigmas. So you just need to double them. And yeah, and now you need to deal with it somehow. A and B here are replicas, and n is the number of replicas. Yeah, so then what you do, you need to take this this kind of term, and you need to call it somehow. So let's call it an overlap. So then the QAB over, and it's called overlap because it will show you overlap between the replicas, whether it's zero or non-zero. And then you introduce this, you know, delta function, and then you obtain, you know, your new effective action essentially. This Q fields called Haber-Stonewich fields, And what you do next is you take this action and you minimize it in order to find the saddle points. And then once you minimize it, what you obtain is you obtain several equations that you need to solve self-consistently. And usually that's done numerically. So it's very analytical up to the last point where you need to solve equations self-consistently. So what you're solving equations for are for this QAB, for overlap of replicas, essentially. And that's connected to the advertised to another parameter. So essentially solving for QAB, you will solve for the order parameter, and that will tell you whether you have some spin glassiness or not.
Can I ask another question? So if you only have the numerical solution of QAB for integer n, how do you take the replica limit?
Yeah, right. I'm gonna actually show it to you more specifically on the model that that I solved. This is just I just showed this to show you how I presented here to show you how to get these equations. But I'm gonna show you how you get rid of the replicas in a couple of slides.
Okay. Yes.
Another question. How is this order parameter related to the autocorrelation function?
To which correlation function?
The autocorrelation function.
Autocorrelation function. It's a great question. So at long times, when your autocorrelation function becomes just depends on the difference between times, you can potentially map it to that QAB, but people don't really know how. So we know how to map it to replica symmetric solution. So when QAB is just QAA, or you have just like one replica. And that's pretty straightforward. But when you have like one, two replicas, so infinite step replicas interbreaking, then people just, we don't really know. It's a good question.
I'm sorry, I'm confused. So I thought this is about a classical step map model. Where's time here?
Oh, sorry. I think the question was about what if you have autocorrelation function that is out of equilibrium? Is that right, Eugene?
Presumably, the answer is that you need to introduce some time dynamics.
Sorry. I think from my understanding, the question was if you take autocorrelation function that I presented before, like this autocorrelation function, right? Time dynamics. This is actual like out of equilibrium time dynamics. How is that connected to this QAB?
Yes.
Is there any relation? So presumably what people say is that if you take long time limit and instead of two time dependence, you have just one time, so C of T, you could do that, right? You just take long time limit. So you can connect that limit to this QAB.
I also have mm-hmm. Chung's question. So this is a stat mac model. There's no real time in the model. So how do you put in the real time dynamics?
Right. This is like two different things. So here is this is out of equilibrium dynamics. I don't present it here in my results. Right.
Yeah, and the QAB is about equilibrium property.
Yeah, QAB is about equilibrium, yeah.
Then how are they related?
Yeah, so at this point, they're not related. At this point, they're not related. That sounds better. So there is no time here, right? There is no like quantum.
But I guess you said they are ultimately related.
Okay, all right, yeah. I confused a lot. So what happens here is this is, let's just say this model, right? And let's just solve for equilibrium solution. So what we get is this QAB, and we get, some number or whatever, some dependence on the coupling constants, right? Now what happens is if you take a similar model, and you consider that this sigma is dependent on time. So you study that out of equilibrium. Or you like quench your model somehow and you study it out of equilibrium. What you see is that in long time limit, you can connect your out of equilibrium function to this Q, but only in a very specific way.
Okay.
Does this make sense?
You said only if the replica symmetry is not broken.
Yeah, and you can connect it only for replica symmetry case when replica symmetry is not broken. Yeah, presumably people argue that you can also connect it for one step replica symmetry breaking when you have another parameter that has sort of splits into. But yeah, there is still like questions about that. So it's not super clear how to connect them. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So you obtain this equations, and depending on how many Haber-Sternich fields you have, or depending on how many, you know, how many parameters you need to introduce to your model, you need to minimize all of with respect to all of them, and you get some set of solutions. So some set of equations that you need to solve self-consistently. So that's essentially the approach how you do the replica trick. And it's helpful for pretty much like all random models. Okay, so let's move on, and let me explain briefly what we obtained in our paper. Now we consider quantum model, quantumizing Spinglass, for example. So the Hamiltonian for this model is as follows. So we have spins that interact with each other randomly with Gaussian distribution. And then we add two terms. We add, you know, transverse field and longitudinal field. Transverse field would correspond to laser tuning rabbit flipping, laser induced rabbit flipping. And longitudinal field will correspond to the laser detuning. So there's not been that many results of including of this model in longitudinal field. Most of the people studied just, Ising spins in, sorry, most of the people just studied this model in transverse field, not in longitudinal field. So that's what we're focusing on. And the reason is because we want to somehow map it to the analog quantum simulator. We want to find a way to realize a model, like a Spinglass model, on the quantum simulator. So this term is kind of necessary. So that's why we included. We just want to study the equilibrium properties of it, and especially spectral functions. So what we do is we again introduce this QAB by local fields, now dependent on time. That's equilibrium approach. That's equilibrium dynamics. The ansatz for this QAB you use is the following. So this QAB, as somebody was asking, what happens to this AB, right? So what you do is you assume an ansatz. You can assume that your QAB is just some function. Let's go to the Matsubara frequencies first. So we did a Fourier transform from equilibrium to from time dependence to Matsubara frequency dependence. And now we do the ansatz. So the ansatz can be just QAB can is just some function plus beta is the inverse time and QAA, which is the order parameter. Or you can assume the ansatz that this QAA, instead of you writing as a number, you just assume it's a matrix QAB. So the first one is called replica symmetric solution. So you just assume that you have one order parameter. One thing. This QAB, though, assumes that you have replica symmetry breaking. What does that mean is that this QAB is not just a diagonal matrix. It's a matrix that has some non-zero values on off-diagonal as well. And this matrix is called ultramatrix. So we usually study replica symmetric solution, replica symmetry breaking solution. One more thing here is how to define which solution to use, right? Because model can have like one solution. So what you do is you compute both of them. You compute replica symmetric solution, you find the free energy of it, then you compute replica symmetry breaking solution, like one step. You find free energy of it and you compare them. And if your replica symmetry breaking solution wins, then you go to two-step replica symmetry breaking, then compare them and so on and so forth until you sort of know that you know, your previous replica symmetry breaking worked. So for this kind of quantumizing Spinglass, replica symmetry breaking actually has infinite step. And that's sort of shown here. this line. The structure of this order parameter with non-zero h, that's what we found. So this was previously known that, you know, UEA goes from zero to this some point x, which is called breaking point in linear dependence, and then Q saturates to some QAA value. And that's the value that you can find experimentally. So that's QAA. The whole structure of the order parameter, like this weird structure, it's actually like not observable in experiment, but in equilibrium, you can still find it. And that's what characterizes this replica symmetry breaking.
Sorry, but do you mind me explaining what the axes are?
So on the axis, on the y-axis, we have Q of U. This Q of U is this ultra matrix, but when you take the limit already, so you take the limit n to zero, and this matrix becomes a function. This Q of U, it's not super obvious how to explain it, but imagine that you have a matrix QAB, just like regular square matrix, and imagine that you are U on the y-axis, on the x-axis. Sorry, U is the parameter that you measure from. Like the further away point on the off diagonal to closer to the diagonal. So once U is zero, that's where your, you know, most replica symmetry breaking like happening. That's like lots of replica symmetry breaking. And then once you go to like U closer to one, that's where you go closer to the diagonal. That's where you go to closer to like replica symmetric. Diagonal solution, essentially. And this x is the breaking point, is where you go from this like breaking solution to saturate to this QA to Andrew Sanderson value. So previously it was known that, you know, Q of U has structure from, it goes from zero to this breaking point linearly and then saturates, and that was at zero field. What we found is Q of QH, and we found how it depends on h, so it's actually h squared. So what did I do here? I just said that, okay, let's take the out of equilibrium dynamics and measure out of equilibrium out of correlation function with time. As the question was posed previously, you know, how to find the correspondence of this out of correlation function to the equilibrium, right? So in principle, we can again take equilibrium value of this autocorrelation function. So like just take long time. What kind of correspondence will have to its order parameter? And we don't really know, but we're hoping that maybe there are ways, and we're thinking about it now. Another thing here is that, as you can see, autocorrelation function behaves, you know, really like it's not an ideal behavior, because it's still kind of, we can't find those times when the function would saturate to some constant value. It always goes to equilibrium, like it always goes to zero. So we actually don't know if we can find a way for this autocorrelation function to like stay in like frozen for, you know, very long time, or if it will always kind of saturate. So if it will always go to zero, you know, at some finite time. So that's another problem. What we found though in equilibrium, we found the phase diagram. So this delta is a gap. What we show here is that if you take your h, which is the longitudinal field, and you measure its finite temperature, so you measure your system at finite temperature, and this r is a parameter that changes across the spin glass phase transition, and we use Landau theory to show this all. You find that in some regime, you have gapless spectral functions. And then you kind of go through a transition, and then you find that there's a gap. So this corresponds to this phase diagram, which is HR. And then here you just actually measure the free energy. And what you obtain is there is a replica symmetry breaking that is winning in this area, in this regime. And then you have a transition to replica symmetric solution.
Here, what is the replica symmetry? Some permutation?
So replica symmetry is this solution, is this ansatz. That's where you don't have competition between replicas at all.
Mm-hmm. So the replica symmetry is some permutation between different your index A and B, right?
So for replica symmetry, you just assume that you have just one index. There's no A and okay. B anymore. There's just one A. Yeah.
Or maybe in another word, this QAB is a rank 2 tensor of that replica symmetry, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. I see. Uh-huh. Thank you.
So yeah, you don't have any metric structure here anymore. So this solution wins for this side, and this solution wins for this side. And this is the form of the spectral function. So it's gapless in this regime. So that's what was using the Landau theory. And yeah, the original it was proposed by Sabir and his colleagues, like how to study that. We just included the field.
I understand. Mm-hmm. So at least the statement. So for the usual Ising model, if I have no disorder and all that, if I start from the ordered phase, turn on an H, the state becomes trivial immediately. Like, mm-hmm. There's a gap proportional to H and so on. So here you're saying if it's the spin glass order, then you turning on a small H doesn't open up a gap. Is that basically the statement?
The statement is, yeah, exactly. So you prepare your system and then you turn on H, and supposedly, if your interaction is corresponds to this like special dense regression, you also have frustration. Yeah, you presumably end up in the spin glass phase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
Does it make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? What is R here? The x-axis?
Yeah, so R is the Landau parameter that tunes across the phase transition.
And how does it correspond to any of the terms in the Hamiltonian?
Yeah, it's related to the transverse field.
I see, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. And one more model we studied is the P equals 3 rotor model, or the P spin model. What we did with that model, we also, took the Hamiltonian that I actually showed you before as an example. But we also, put it in the longitudinal field and then transverse field. So this is a term corresponds to the like quantumness, and this is the external field. And we also put the spherical constraint here is that that's makes it constrained and solvable. And distribution of coupling constants again is Gaussian. So in this case, yeah, you use a replica trick, and you obtain this system of self-consistent equations, as I was showing you before. These equations, they're just three of them, and you can solve them on the computer, pretty easy algorithm. But before you do that, what you need to do, again, you need to assume an ansatz. You need to assume an ansatz, and that ansatz is, again, replica symmetric or replica symmetry breaking. So fortunately, in this model, in pure auto model, we know that if it's in the spin glass phase, it has to be one-step replica symmetry breaking solution. If you include two-step, then you kind of can disregard it because the free energy is going to be higher than one-step. And that sort of helps us to... Yeah.
Uh-huh. Can you remind me what one-step, two-step means?
Right. Sorry. So this matrix, ultra matrix, right? So again, we can assume an ansatz here, which is just a function, then we can assume the ansatz that is the ultramatrix, and that ultramatrix is, you need to also assume something in the structure. So what you can do, you can assume that ultramatrix has blocks. So imagine that you have like diagonal, then you have like small of diagonal blocks, and if these blocks have 2x2 structure, then it's one step replica symmetry breaking. You can make these blocks bigger, you can make these blocks 3x3, and look, assume that, diagonal has one value, off diagonal has another value, and then has another value, so it's like three values of that block. Then it's going to be like two-step replica symmetry breaking. Then you can include like 4x4, and it's going to be four-step replica symmetry breaking. You can do it like many, many times, and you can go up to infinity, and that's what Parisi showed for For sharing tickets Patrick model, that there is infinite step replica symmetry breaking if you type have to include all of them. And that's also what's shown here, is this linear solution is the infinite step replica symmetry breaking. If you have just this plateau, this is one step replica symmetry, this one step replica symmetry breaking. And that's what I'm going to show you for P equals three. It's also like it has only two values, one and two. So it's like one step. And this like infinite step, because like it goes like into things and it's, you know, step from here to here.
So, physically, what does the number of steps imply?
That's a great question. I don't have a good intuition what it actually implies, you know, physically, from the point of view what like actually happens to spins. I guess like from the energy landscape point of view, you can think of it as there are like infinite number of minimum of different energy. So that might be an intuition.
I see. Thank you.
So if you have like one step replica symmetry, like you have like two values of minima, I guess. You know, they're competing with each other, but yeah.
I see. Thanks.
Not competing, sorry, like one of them is like lower, one higher. Yeah.
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 So can I understand those similarities intuitively by saying for P equal to three, I explicitly break the Ising symmetry anyway, so it's gonna look similar to the longitudinal field. Can I understand this, you know, somehow you lose the infinite step replica breaking this way, or it's more than that?
Yeah, it might be that, yeah. You still have kind of infinite step here though, right? Mm-hmm. It's just the only thing that changes, is it saturated linear? Yeah.
For P equal to three, there's no region you need this infinite step.
For P equals three, no, there's no region. Oh, that's what you're saying. Like if you put P equals three, then you sort of break the Ising symmetry and then you have one.
Then is there an intuitive understanding of why once I go to P larger than two, suddenly the structure seems to change a lot?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know why. In fact, if you include P equals three, P equals four, P equals five, like for anything P greater than two, you have only one step. And yeah, I don't know why. Yeah,
I see. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, can I look at this figure again? The spectrum.
Yeah.
The next one.
Oh.
The color plot. Yeah. So capital T is the temperature.
Well, yeah.
What? When you say Q of omega is like omega, this is a real frequency. Is omega real frequency or?
Yeah. Sorry. Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's real frequency?
Yeah.
Oh, so it's real frequency at finite temperature.
No, yeah, so okay, so this is, yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, it's you can do it at finite temperature too. It's, yeah, you just write down your like equations, mass bar frequency, and then you do analytic continuation to real frequency. So this is just an analytically continued function, yeah.
Then, I guess I'm a bit confused. About the question Chung asked before. So suppose R is very negative. Suppose R is very negative. Suppose there's no disorder, and I will be in the R is not the Z2 symmetry breaking tuning parameter, it's the spin glass tuning parameter.
This R?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, yeah, it's not, yeah, it's just the spin, it's a tuning parameter between the phases.
Oh, okay. So it has nothing to do with the Ising symmetry breaking.
No, yeah. Yeah.
Thanks.
It might be related in a way, but yeah, that's not necessarily, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions? Okay. So we use a replica trick and we get these equations. And again, like imagine we just substitute this QEA and, you know, just instead of like sigma AB, whatever AB, you just consider just AA. So assume that the structure is just replica symmetric, there's no breaking. then you can solve them and you obtain, you know, some structure of Q, and then you can do the same thing with replica central breaking, and then you compare free energies, for example. You can do that. Yeah, so on this slide, this is essentially what we were interested in. So you take replica symmetric quintets, for example, and you plug this in these equations. And then what you do analytic continuation to real frequencies. And that's the equations that you get. And you solve for the spectral functions for this rho of omega. So rho of omega is just imaginary part of the of Q. What you obtain is this kind of structure. So for h equals zero, you see that the spectral functions, this is their behavior, the symmetric around zero. And once you increase g here, this is actually like transverse field. So once you increase g, you see that your gap, this gap, saturates the same value. And once you decrease g, it sort of becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. For finite, so, yeah.
So where's the temperature dependence?
So this is at zero temperature. This is now zero temperature. It's like I'm going between here and forth. So this is a different model. This is quantizing spin glass. And this we studied at finite temperature, and that was all good because it was Landau theory. It was like a little bit easier. So for this model, we did replica trick and we did like actual self-consistent equations. And here we studied spectral functions specifically only at zero temperature.
I see. So what is the temperature dependence in the previous case?
Yeah, that's a good question. So once you, the higher the temperature is, so the smaller the replica symmetry breaking becomes. So it's just a normal temperature dependence. You sort of, yeah.
So Q is engineering dimension for Q is dimensionless.
This Q?
Basically, I'm asking whether this spectral function depends on the temperature in the power law or just by Boltzmann factor.
On temperature, oh, that's a good question. I might be wrong, but I think it's just linear dependence. I don't remember.
Okay. No, it's okay. It's okay. Thanks.
Okay. Right. So as I just said, it saturates to some value. The gap saturates. And then once you turn on H longitudinal field, then you actually gap grows once you increase J, and it seems like it's growing like linearly, but may not be the case. I did not compute for minimum values. So the fact that it's just the gap is growing with increasing G. But once you step replica symmetry, once you take replica symmetry breaking solution, so first the structure of the dotted parameter becomes like this. As I said, it only has one step replica symmetry breaking. And that's sort of shown here. So you have only two values, Q naught and Q one. This Q naught depends on H as H squared. So yeah, once your H is zero, then this goes to zero. The spectral functions, again, like same way, the number of equations becomes larger because now you have two order parameters. Your order parameter consists of two values. Then the number of equations grows, but you can still compute them and find the spectral function behavior. And then you see like a perfectly gapless solution for different values of G. So this is the replica symmetry breaking phase, and you see that it's gapless. So in the phase diagram in this model is as follows. You have H and you have G. So G here is again transverse field, and H is the longitudinal field. And you see the transition between replica symmetry breaking and replica symmetric phases. And as you can see, like replica central breaking is in the large region of the phase diagram, which is kind of surprising as well, because people kind of did not know, at least they for sure disagreed whether if you increase age, there should be any replica central breaking, but what we found that there is one. And yeah, that's just the structure of the order parameter, the found with dependence of G and H. Yeah, so as a conclusion, we found the quantum Ising spin glass in the external field has a spin glass phase, and similarly to pure order model in the field also has a spin glass phase. And both of these like spin glass phases or replica central breaking phases, they are in a large region of the phase diagram. And in the spin glass phase, you find the spectral functions gapless. And future directions that I'm actually looking forward to study. So one of them is out of equilibrium dynamics. So that's the study of outer correlation functions, just using the Schwinger-Keldysh approach. So that one is pretty complicated and also depends on the model that we are considering. But the interesting question here is like, what is the relation between long time dynamics and order parameter structure? Is there any? And that kind of can show whether or not replica symmetry breaking by itself is physical or not, because now it kind of doesn't feel that way. So then next question is find the parameter regime and study specific models for experimental setups. So that was the whole motivation of this project. And we sort of like went a little bit different direction at some point, but the initial motivation is to just actually study, take analog quantum simulator model, whatever, like the one that they can realize, and see whether or not there is actually some replica symmetry breaking structure, or if there is any way to find glassy dynamics without considering equilibrium dynamics. Just see whether or not we can actually see this like slow equilibration. And it would be also interesting to find other glassy models. So now that I know kind of how to deal with this complicated approach, replica symmetry breaking and such, and it would be interesting to explore other glassy models and see whether or not we can make any progress. So we can explore dynamics, we can explore equilibrium there, and just find any relevance to quantum simulators as well. And yeah, thank you for your attention.
All right. Yeah, thanks very much for Maria for a nice talk and for not going over time, which is refreshing. So which means we have plenty of time for questions. Anybody can get started with the questions?
Can I ask? Yeah. So physically, what does replica symmetry breaking imply?
Physically?
Yeah.
It's a great question. So my understanding is I tried to like search literature and try to understand like what does it actually mean. So you can one way to think about it, as I already mentioned, you can think of energy landscape. And that energy landscape is like really complicated, and especially if you're considering some physical model. We don't know how to, let me just step away for a sec. So if you take like an actual spin glass problem, right? Not this like mean field type of spin glass. If you take like actual finite dimensional, like spin glass model that exists, not exists, but you can find some materials, and try to make any progress, you will find it extremely difficult. It's pretty much like impossible to solve analytically. But we also know that the energy landscape of this kind of models is extremely complicated. It's like many, many, many minima, and they all look different, on the other hand, we know we can take mean field model and we can make some progress there. We know how to solve them analytically in some way. We can also find an energy landscape that also looks, kind of complicated. And we can associate that energy landscape with replica symmetry breaking. So there's like Parisi distribution function that can actually say something about those minima. So we know kind of how to relate them in mean field level. We don't know if there is any replica symmetry breaking in fine dimensional models, for example. So we can't really make that assumption there. So whether or not this mean field kind of approach that gives us replica symmetry breaking strategy is physical or not, like I don't know if it's satisfying, probably not, but that's kind of my understanding.
Yeah, but it's fine. Maybe this is just a very complicated problem. Thank you.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah, if you're interested, we can talk later. I can tell you more about, you know, what I understand about it.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a probably a slightly more concrete version of Liu Jin's question, basically? So for the P larger than 2 case, there's only one step replica breaking. So in terms of physical observable, does that lead to a qualitative difference between the P larger than 2 and P equal to 2 case?
Between P larger than 2 and P equals to 2, then?
Yeah, between one step replica breaking and infinite step replica
breaking.
If I calculate some observable, can I see some qualitative difference?
So infinite step, but I see two step. I mean, yeah, so that's the thing. Depending on the model, you have either infinite step or I see. So you're saying that let's consider two models that have infinite step and one step replica symmetry breaking. What is the observable that can tell you the difference between these two, right? Yeah, that's a good question.
So you mentioned, in fact, if you only look at, my impression is if you look at the spectral function, they don't seem to differ very much, right?
Yeah.
It seems to be just ultra to omega at low frequency.
Yeah, exactly. So the structure, yeah, the only thing that encodes the replica symmetry breaking is the water parameter, as I discussed a lot.
I see. So you're saying maybe you need to probe some finer structure of the landscape to see the difference?
I think so, yeah. That's my intuition.
I see. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Love to think about.
Can I ask a question, Maria? Thanks for the talk. So you mentioned in the beginning that finding the minima of the spin glasses is like an NP-hard problem, but you have in this particular classes of models, actually the large N models, you have found the order parameter in the equilibrium state, right? So should I think of this as an easy instantiation of the NP-hard problem, or is the order parameter somehow an easy observable to compute? After your solution, what makes it still an NP-hard problem is, I guess.
Oh, I see. So this is I mean, what we did here is not the same as finding the converging to the ground state, right? Of the model. Imagine that you have sort of a system and it converges to some value, but it's not the ground state, right? So it's the same, okay. I guess what we're studying here is the equilibrium properties, but not necessarily we don't necessarily find the ground state.
Uh-huh, I see.
Right.
So even if you take the zero temperature limit, you're only probing the order parameter, the Edwards Anderson order parameter, and not other properties of the ground state. Is that a way to understand this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we, yeah, if we do it at zero temperature, you can still, so for example, spectral functions, they all compute at zero temperature. And
but I guess it's possible that beyond these like p-spin type models, it's not possible to compute this exactly, and that's where the hardness comes from.
Yeah, that's what I feel like. Yeah, I mean, this approach is also like it's a like if effect, this like mean field. You know, you make like make batch of approximations to make it analytical and stuff. So, so it's approximate as well, right? In a way.
Right.
But yeah, but if you take it this modeling, try to like exactly find the ground state. That
And one more question, maybe slightly related question I had was, so you are looking at the like the saddle points of these equations, right? Like, so even when the replica symmetry breaking, or say the replica symmetric saddle is the lowest free energy saddle point, you'd still have the other saddle points which can contribute to some dynamics. Like, is it possible that even if you're in the replica symmetric phase, the RSB saddles contribute to some physical observables being slow or something like that? Like, or has it been studied?
You mean, so if you're in a, if you're in the rest phase,
yeah, I'm saying that suppose you're close to the boundary, you still have a bunch of RSB saddle points, which are, yeah, which are not the lowest, but they still have contributions to the, say, the partition function. Right? So does it have, like, does that somehow come in any observable, or,
Yeah, with here, of course, just like don't consider that. But in principle, that might be the case. Yeah, I don't see why. But I guess like for our interest, it wasn't really important. But I think if you want to do something different, then that might be something to consider.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you for the question.
Yeah, anyone else?
It was supposed to be an hour and a half, an hour talk, right? It was supposed to be an hour and a half talk.
No, it was a 1 hour talk. It's just that people often like try to stretch out the hour, so it's like an hour plus, which Okay, well, it doesn't seem like there's any more questions. So let's thank Maria. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for inviting me. All right, bye.
Yeah, thanks.